Welcome to Let's Talk About Tests, Baby, a fortnightly show where we ponder the meaning of testing. Hello listeners, welcome to episode 74. Before I jump into the show, I wanted to tell you about something that's happening in March. It's called Tripod, and there's a hashtag, Tripod. And it's a month where podcasters and people who love podcasts come together to share podcasts with people who might not have listened to them yet and will probably love them but haven't found the right one. And so the idea is you share the podcast that you love and grow the podcast community. If you go to patreon.com/gemhill, there is a post that you don't even have to pay me for to see. There is a post where I share some of the podcasts that I've only just started listening to recently. They're either new or new to me, and feel free to share yours in the comments as well. Let's make March the month of podcasts. I said there is a hashtag, TRYPOD, and you can find lots of stuff going on there. Other news, Matt and I are going to both be at Test Bash Brighton, so please do come up and say hi to us. And we are skipping the interview portion this month due to Test Bash and other things. We just haven't had the time to organise it. So there will be an episode in 2 weeks' time, but it'll just be Matt and I. And then in April, we'll be back with another interview as normal. And that's enough podcast admin. Let's get on with the show. Hello, listeners. Welcome to this week's episode. I'm here with Matt. Hello.
Hello.
And this week, we're going to talk about localisation. I wanted to cover this because there's a project on the horizon at work that will have some localization involved, and I've never done it before. So I thought, let's get ahead of myself and start looking at some things I need to be thinking about, knowing the little bits I do about the project, which is it's like a multi-website where each like country or area has its own front end of the site. So I can figure there's going to be lots of different things, and you can like purchase stuff through the site. So there's going to be, each one's going to have a slightly different checkout and all those kind of things going on. So looks like it's going to be quite a nice meaty project to get into, but I know nothing about localization at all. So Matt, have you done localization before?
Yes, I have. When I started back at Sony, they actually had a department specifically for localization, but as part of my testing there, we sometimes did have to do some functional testing, but focused on localization as well. Mm-hmm. In Sony's context, that would be, so for a particular game, they would have all the different languages, let's say, and we'd do playthroughs just to functionally check that it works, basically, in all the different languages. And that used to surprise some people, because people used to say, well, what's the difference? Like, why would it be different in German or French or Spanish or whatever? The common phrase that come out of it is, isn't just text that's different? And no, it's a lot more than that, as I learned, actually. And one of the simple examples of that straight away is, even just if you just assumed it was only text differences, sometimes we would have bugs regarding the text, obviously. Even on a basic level, if the text wasn't there, there were some titles that would crash if the text wasn't there. So the game was unplayable without the text being loaded in. If nothing else, it just looks rubbish as well when, so it's meant to have Spanish and it has English there, or if it's a placeholder or whatever. So yeah, that's the start of it. People think it's just text, and it kind of is to start with, but there's a bit more to it than that.
Oh, there's some, even if you just do text, just, I was having a discussion actually, a slightly drunken discussion, about different languages. One of my friend's partners is Italian, and she learned English before she came over here. And just like the things that she found, I mean, English is a terrible one to learn anyway, because there are no rules, but just the differences in like rules and syntax. And like in Russian, I think what I've been told is, if you want to put emphasis on a word, you put that at the end of a sentence.
All right.
So you can play around a lot with sentence structure and syntax. And you've got to know that. You can't just translate it word by word. You've got to know what makes sense.
Yeah. It's back to usability testing, in a sense, really, is what would the end user expect? Does it make sense to them? And the big one for me that came from the game industry is, there was a game I was on, not at Sony, another place, that was a quiz game. And the the quiz had like questions that were like play on words. So the answer was a play on word from the question in English. And they'd basically just, and this is quite a typical thing to do with localization, they'd get a spreadsheet, they'd put all the English text from all the different places everywhere, questions, answers, whatever, and then just have columns saying Spanish, French, German, and then just send that off to the translators who would literally translate it as it was. So as you can imagine, literally translating some English play on words joke doesn't really make sense anymore when it's in another language.
Yeah, exactly. There's a whole load of context and everything missing.
Yeah, it was. It wasn't a good idea. that's a good example again of where the company had thought, oh, this is just some text, so we'll just get it directly translated. And in the end, we wasted quite a lot of time going back and forth, basically rewriting nearly all of the questions. And then we're talking about, like, let's say 400 questions with answers or something like that. So, yeah, that takes some time. They obviously hadn't factored that into the project, and they were doing all this at the end, as always. So, it didn't hit deadline for sure because of that. And on a slightly related note as well, that same game had a lot of text that was in graphics, so it wasn't actually, as in computer terms, it wasn't strings, it was like artwork that happened to have text in the artwork. So to change that, you have to get an artist to redesign the artwork again. So that takes even longer.
So I said I started to learn this because it's coming up on the horizon, and my first protocol, as always, is the testing Slack channels. That's where I go when I have any question, largely about testing, but sometimes just any question that affects my life, I go there and ask. And I got some really, like, the answers I got were amazing, as always, but it's stuff that I hadn't even thought about, like just the differences in aesthetics and what people expect from websites in different countries, and like colour symbolism and things like that. When I got those answers, I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. There's a whole slew of cultural differences. But I hadn't actually really realised until that point that there are so many cultural differences that I wouldn't even be aware of. Because, yeah, I've not immersed myself or even really got to know those cultures. So I guess it's just, on top of getting someone who's familiar with the language, you need someone who's actually familiar with the cultural mores of wherever you're aiming it at, which is like a whole other different skill, maybe.
Yeah, it almost goes to like a kind of marketing kind of research, effectively. Who's our target audience? What would offend or not offend them? What would they really like or dislike? And trying to be aware of all those cultural differences.
Yeah, exactly. Our marketing team does some research, and you can do anything from just internet research to interviews with end users and stuff to figure out what they need. And it'd be the same sort of thing where you could almost like present designs maybe or a prototype and see what the feedback is there and what we need to change.
I've personally not even thought of that either. I've never even come across that yet in any of the stuff I've tested. I think we're all a little bit biased by that, aren't we? Because we don't, you know, in those other countries, you don't see it from their point of view. So it's easy for you to assume the software works this way, so it must work the same way for them and look the same and everything.
Exactly. There's this weird sort of thing where the internet has made globalization a lot easier. It's brought everyone closer together. But at the same time, there's still these pockets that you just don't see because you're still from a different culture. And so if anything, it's kind of made them less obvious, because you go, oh well, like Google is the same everywhere. It almost definitely isn't, but your thought is, you know, the white background, the Google logo, the search box, that's the same everywhere no matter where you are around the world, so other websites must be similar.
Yeah, I definitely, when you say that, it definitely makes me think, I think maybe it's because we get a little bit lazy perhaps, that because everyone comes to us and speaks English, and you know, that kind of aspects of it, I guess. It's easy then to assume that everyone is the same. And I guess, yeah, like I say, globalization, I guess, is tending that way. But I think that's when I self-reflect about it. That's why I don't necessarily appreciate that all the time, is because, well, if there is any time like another company from another country advertises something to me in this country, they've already localized it effectively. It's so standard, you know, how like people market stuff now, and kind of like, I guess it's a bit of an Americanism with a lot of it. You just become used to it, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. You just kind of get like so funneled in, even with globalization, that you don't notice these things until someone shows you or tells you, essentially. But the same slightly drunken conversation I was having with my friend's partner, she was saying that when she was in Italy, they would speak like mostly English with a little bit of Italian during business. And if they didn't speak English, even to other Italian companies, they weren't seen as professional because they weren't speaking English, they were speaking Italian.
Wow.
And it's just such, the culture imperialism is just so ridiculous that English is the standard, like in a lot of places, to the point where speaking the language of the country isn't seen as professional.
That's crazy.
Absolutely insane. Completely, almost completely irrelevant to what we're talking about, but, you know, it just absolutely, well, it's not really, because it's just, yeah, it's so prevalent.
It's that kind of thing that makes you take a step back and realise, you know, the differences in culture, which is, I guess, what we're generally saying you don't really appreciate. And why would you, unless you've been living in those cultures or, you know, quite knowledgeable about them? Why, you know, you wouldn't. They don't appreciate some things about us, perhaps, but it's perhaps easier for them because British and especially American culture is, you know, quite well known worldwide. You know, like all the values and, you know, kind of like superstitions and that kind of thing, quite well known. Whereas for us, it's quite, like I say, I think we end up quite lazy because we don't need to. But it's quite difficult because we don't know everyone else's superstitions or social conventions, that kind of thing. Like, for example, the one I always remember is the one about, I believe in many Southeastern Asian cultures, there's quite a bias towards senior, like older people. They like command more respect to the point that you wouldn't question them, basically. So the situation I know that comes up in was with the whole air crash stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say, we spoke about that during the air crashing episode, didn't we?
Yeah, yeah. So in that case, you've got like junior pilots where they're having to train them out of their social norms, saying to them, you know, you should question the senior figure. They don't necessarily know better just because they're older, you know. And they're sure there's some things about our culture that we don't even think about, but other people will go, oh, that's a bit odd. So to bring it back to testing, one of the other examples I've got is with the differences in culture is differences in addresses and postcodes and especially telephone numbers. Where I currently am at ResponseTap, we deal with a lot of telephone numbers. In the past, there's been a mistake made where people have assumed that all telephone numbers are going to be 10 characters long. And when no, they can be a lot longer or can be a lot less than that. It can really vary. Depends on a lot of things as well. So you have bugs come out of things because of those assumptions, basically.
Every time a client comes and says, we'd like some validation on our postcode field, I just cry inside. Because I'm like, even if you're just going to the UK, there's a lot of variation. Never mind when you've got places that don't use postcodes, well, not even worldwide, like Ireland, they don't have postcodes, I believe.
Yeah, although I will say, I don't know about postcodes, but for telephone numbers, Google supply a library called LibPhoneNumber, which is automatically kept up to date with any, so if any region, such as I think France recently changed all of their region codes in their telephone numbers, they keep their library up to date. So you can use that to validate, is this telephone number a valid telephone number or various other pieces of information? Like what is it? Is it a payphone or a toll free or whatever?
Oh yeah, there's loads of like all the postcode lookup things there where you can just type in a postcode, it'll look up and it'll give you the address or tell you that it's not a valid postcode or whatever. It's just how often is that updated? Like when I moved into my previous place, it wasn't even that new a build, but I couldn't find myself even on Google Maps using my postcode, never mind a postcode lookup place.
Oh yeah, it's never going to be perfect.
So yeah, it's one of those, just like there's so many issues with validating that kind of stuff. Never mind, like I said, worldwide, where a lot of places don't have postcodes at all.
Yeah, well, and also they don't all have automated systems that Google, whoever, can tap into. Yeah, that's never going to be perfect. But. And then another one is like measurements. So yeah, you got imperial versus metrics.
It's actually a point that you've made reminds me of Anecdote Central today. You put a note about voltage and current standards, and I've got a friend in America whose mind is blown that our electric kettles boil in about 3 minutes.
Really?
Because they only have, like, it's 240 here standard. I think it's like 120 in America. So electric kettles aren't really a thing. Like,
that's crazy.
and so I sent her a link to the Wikipedia page where, like, we have caused a countrywide power grid just because everyone put the kettle on at the same time. And it just completely blew her mind that this was a thing that not only that we have that is so ubiquitous that we can destroy our own power grid with it.
That's awesome. I like that story.
We've kind of covered languages, but the one thing we haven't covered is non-Latin languages.
Yeah.
Like Arabic and Hebrew and Russian and all those ones. And then like the Korean and Japanese, where it's more like glyphs and symbols rather than actual letters.
Yeah, the interesting thing about particularly those are they change depending on the context. So as you type effectively, a lot of software I've seen actually changes the characters for you, which is quite interesting. But
a lot of websites and programs do that with Arabic as well, because the letters join together as you write them, and a lot of programs will do that for you now automatically.
Yeah, so you might have,
which is quite cool,
you might have written an application that, you know, you take alphanumeric text from, you know, English or French or whatever, and suddenly you might have to rewrite how it, you know, either just displays the text or autocorrects or gives suggestions. Might have to completely change, potentially, and especially if you're writing from right to left instead of left to right. You've also got all kinds of things like different punctuation, plurals, different numeric systems.
Yeah, exactly. Just so many different things. Just that's why you need to get someone, an actual translator, rather than Google.
Well,
just to know all these things.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing as well. It's not just translating after the fact, after you produced an app, because some of these things may need technical changes. So you kind of want to get them involved as soon as possible, really, to highlight this stuff so you can start changing it if you need to.
Exactly. And also you need to make sure you've translated everything, including all the error messages that you might not have even realised will come up. I was thinking more just things like ones that might come from my perspective. We use Drupal or Magento, and then we can put our own validation on top of that. But if there's a one that's a really specific one that Magento or Drupal throw up, we might not have thought about that, so we might not have had that translated, got that translation in place.
Yeah, which I was going to say is basically where our job comes in, which is even if you know nothing about any of these languages, anything about the cultural stuff, any of the things we just mentioned, you can still add value as a tester just by simply looking at it in the language, just load the app or the website in the language and just use it as normal and try and keep an eye out for things like that. And it's obvious because obviously it's in English when it should be in whatever language it should be in. And you can definitely add value there because, like I say, there's always something that gets missed. Someone forgets about something, or sometimes people think something's like a shared resource that this text is going to get used everywhere and maybe it's not. Another one is if you've got video or audio as well, does it need dubbing or subtitles, or does it need a new voice actor potentially?
Even just from like an accessibility point of view, making sure that your labels are translated as well. So if someone's using a screen reader in French, they're going to be able to still understand what you're asking them to do because everything's going to be in French, not like all the text is in French, like the actual text that you see in French, but the field, the hidden like CSS field labels or whatever are still in English.
Oh, I like that. That's cool. You just mixed two like testing things to look at: accessibility and localization. But yeah, definitely for sure. Like accessibility is still obviously a big thing, even if you're in a different language, it's still important. So definitely. And I guess there's an aspect to that as well. With other languages, you've got different sizes of font or different lengths. So how readable they are as well.
And that kind of comes into validation as well, like. Does validation make sense if you're asking people to input something in a different language? We've all seen those screenshots where someone, usually someone with a sort of an East Asian name, has put in their first name and they've been told that their first name is too short.
Yeah.
And they have to have at least three characters. Like, well, my name has two characters, so I can't.
So one thing you can do as well to sort of help a problem such as that, well, maybe not the validation, but you can have some common things. So if you think about any application, not everything is text. There are buttons and graphics that represent things that are consistent with other applications you've used. So the common example is always the floppy disk to mean save, a cross being to close something or something like that. So sometimes you can get away with just removing all the text and using something that's hopefully common across all cultures. It might not be, though, of course, still, but...
Yeah, exactly. And that kind of, I mean, you're meant to try and reduce text and make things a bit more intuitive either way, aren't you? So that kind of all feeds into the design of the website or application that you're building to try and make sure it is still intuitive regardless of the words on the screen.
Yeah. Also, there are some standards on things like that. So, for example, like an obvious example is like radiation. Yeah, they're all standardized warnings that are, I believe, are universal. Everyone would understand what those mean. So,
we've kind of touched on some technical issues. Shall we continue down that vein?
So one example of a technical challenge is actually so let's say you translated it all and you've taken your app that's in English, let's say, and you put it in French, German, Korean, Japanese, whatever. How do you then maintain it? So like, if we change the text in English in future, add new text, how are we going to change the Korean text and add a new text? Have we got this translator available all the time, or are they contractors, or how does that work? Have we only budgeted ourselves to change it once and then never again? And is it easy for the developers to make those changes as well?
Yes, developability.
Yeah.
We have testability, let's have developability.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. And just things like, I guess it's kind of going back to cultural differences, but for me it's a technical challenge, which is kind of just like making sure that your deployments can be run at a time that makes sense. If your deployment's going to be disruptive, can they be run at a time that makes sense?
That is an amazing point that I've completely missed off here, which is that's kind of like an ops thing, actually, kind of a DevOps thing, in that, yeah, if you need to have your server down for maintenance, typically in this country, people do that in the middle of the night because they think, well, no one's using it then. But yeah, suddenly if you're going global, anyone in any part of the world could be trying to use it. You can't actually have downtime anymore like that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you can still look at your analytics and stuff and figure out where the least worst time, I guess, to have the site down if you need it down.
Yeah, that's an awesome point, by the way. We've not even thought of that. Yeah.
We've basically almost got like a schedule of when clients are okay with us deploying, because we handle loads of different clients.
Yeah.
So it's something constantly in the back of our mind going, right, these people need a week's notice. These people, it has to be out of office hours. These people don't care.
Yeah, and in other situations, you might have to involve your ops team in that kind of stuff as well. Because, yeah, like I say, they may have lots of processes built in that are like at my current place, we do deployments a particular like time in the morning because we serve America and UK. Early in the morning, the UK were okay because it's, you know, people are starting to ramp up and it's people in the US have died off because they've gone to sleep. So it's okay for us to do it then. But suddenly now everything's based around us being able to deploy that time. And if we were now serving, like, I don't know, India or somewhere, we can't do that.
Yeah, exactly.
So another thing as well on the technical side is sometimes in some applications you're relying on third-party services such as Google Maps or PayPal, or there's loads of things now. It's the Internet of Things, isn't it? But I know in China particularly, you don't actually have access to a lot of these things. For example, I don't think Google is even allowed to operate there. If your app is all based on access to Google Maps, let's say, it's kind of useless in China. So if you want to sell in China, you're going to have to come up with something else. That brings us on to, yeah, kind of regulatory compliance. So in all these other countries, you have different laws, different taxes, different restrictions, even disclaimers as well. So like in the EU, we have to put these disclaimers everywhere about tracking you with cookies, but you might not need to do that in other places. But yeah, as a tester, you have to find out things like that.
And make sure it's displayed only where it needs to be displayed.
Yeah, not to everyone in the world.
The one thing I haven't actually thought about is setting up like proxies or whatever so I can actually make sure things are displaying correctly. Kind of assuming that'll be the easier bit.
Yeah, or the developers might be able to give you some kind of environment where you can trigger those changes perhaps. Though obviously it's always better doing it in production, of course. Yeah, and one of the final things on kind of technical stuff for me is time zones.
I hate time zones.
There's always time zone bugs.
I mean, I just hate them from a practical point of view, but there are always time zone books. Always.
Yeah, I kind of wish they would just, like, stamp them out. The UN should just decree there are no more time zones. Everyone just works the same time. 9 o'clock is the same everywhere. You just go into bed at different times. So fine. It would be so much easier. But yeah, time zones can be a right pain in the ass. And they are important when you localize, of course, because people expect whatever they're looking at to appear in the right time to them, or they want to be able to search on their kind of time zone is what they'd be expecting. So, and then the confusing part of that is you've got daylight savings on top of it, which not every country has daylight savings.
And, like, I'm sure one country got rid of daylight savings, like, a couple of years ago. So it's still one of the things that can change.
Yeah. Well, the time zone themselves can change as well.
Yeah.
I think even the UK changed the time zone recently. I say recently, like, in the last 100 years or so.
Oh, yeah.
I think. Or maybe that was daylight savings I'm thinking of. But, yeah, whole time zones can change for certain countries. Daylight savings as well can apply not just on a country level, but on, like, a state or region level as well. Like, I think there's some states in America have daylight savings, but some don't, potentially. I seem to remember something like that.
Yeah, there's, like, about 4 different time zones in America.
Yeah. Well, even more of the daylight savings.
Yeah, exactly.
Some people always assume that the only time zones are hourly ones, so, like, +1, +2, +3, and so on and so forth. But there's actually half an hour and 45-minute time zones as well. And that's another thing. Like, all of this stuff we're talking about, the reason it becomes a problem in most apps is just assumptions. People make all these assumptions about their own knowledge. So most people's common knowledge of time zones is they're each hour, but that is one big assumption in itself.
I mean, everything that we kind of pick up on, a lot of the books are due to people assuming things incorrectly. But it's just the level of assumption can be a hell of a lot different when you're dealing with something that's going to be seen in hundreds of different countries.
I think the common thing for me of these assumptions are that they come down to awareness. And, like, there's even things we were just talking about just now that I'm like, oh, I didn't even think of that. Like, it seems so obvious. But if you just not even thought of it, what, you know, you then just stick to, oh, yeah, we don't need to think about it. Well, you don't even think about it, basically.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it's just awareness, and there's so many things to be aware of. So as a tester, my big kind of piece of advice on localization is, It's a big topic. Don't treat it as a simple, easy one. It might be in your context. The localization might be really easy and quick and simple. But every time I hear it as a word when we're talking about, oh, we're going to go in France or whatever, I'm like, I want to question everything about this.
So what we have covered is that I have a lot to learn.
As we all do. I definitely do too.
Exactly. But I think it's a good starting point of things for people that people need to think about when they're either thinking about going, like, more global with a site, or if they're approaching testing something that is seen in multiple countries and has that localization in place.
Yeah. And even if you're not going in worldwide, all these countries, just as long as people get a sense of that this is quite a big topic, in the same way as security, in the same way as performance, in the same way as accessibility. They could be tiny things, but they're rarely not. There's usually something that's a big deal about them. I'm 100% sure that if anyone out there is, like, thinking, oh, I've not really looked at localization and maybe I should have a look at my own app right now regarding that, I guarantee you'll find something. Guarantee it. There will be something that's, like, not quite right.
Absolutely, absolutely. As a podcast, we stand by that guarantee.
Well, like, at least if someone challenges me and says, I actually had a look, there was nothing wrong with it at all, I'd like to hear that. I'll have a go myself.
Well, listeners, you heard him. With that guarantee, we're going to wrap it up. If you're not going to be at Test Bash Brighton, or even if you are and you want to say hi through another medium, you know where we're at. Let's talk about tests at gmail.com. Let's talk about tests on Skype. Let's talk tests on Twitter. Come say hi. Share, rate, review, all that good stuff, and we will talk to you in 2 weeks' time. Bye. Our planet will be just a point of light.